Blog Talk Radio.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out.
Off the Chain, and I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and that was Crazy by Charles Barkley. Those of you who have listened to the show for any length of time know that I try to fit the songs to my guests and what we're going to talk about. There's a very good reason I picked that song tonight. Number one, it's one of my favorite songs, and number two, it speaks about what we're going to be discussing with my guest tonight. And I want to apologize for last night's show. Thank you, Blog Talk Radio, for screwing up my show. I don't know what happened on their end, but my guests could call in. I couldn't see them on the board. The whole entire site with Blog Talk yesterday had its own brain cramp. It took on its own life form. So by the time I set up the board to run the show last night, I couldn't even see my guest when they called in. And no matter what I did, I could not make it work. Well, I'm not real happy with Blog Talk Radio because that was that guest I've been waiting on for months and could not interview him. So I'm not real happy with them right now. I'm seriously considering changing venues. They get one more chance. They screw it up again, I will be changing venues. That being said, And because they've screwed up their site, I'm not getting good numbers of where we are as far as listeners. We're pretty darn close to 80,000, and we're pretty darn close to 100,000 worldwide with all the podcasts. But again, the numbers are so skewed, I don't know where we are. We just plod on like we normally do. So Cullen Martin, I apologize, my friend. He is with the Satanic Player Society, and he is their ringmaster. And I so apologize for not being able to interview him last night. But I am going to get him on this show before the end of the year if I have to do a special show for him. I've promised him that, and it will happen. So y'all stay tuned. I do want to say thank you to Australia, because Australia has been so loyal to this show. They are our largest listening base. And because of that, I very proudly promote a blues band that is out of Australia. The name of the band is the Teskey Brothers. And ladies and gentlemen, if you have ever heard them sing, you would swear that they were from Bourbon Street, because they sound like Eric Clapton and B.B. King and Roy Orbison and Otis Redding and Robert Johnson and Johnny Lang and Billy Royal, all rolled into a nice, neat, tight package. So if you get an opportunity, look them up. They're on all the social media. I think they're on Reverbination, CD Baby. Look them up and buy their records, because they are absolutely amazing. All of their songs are original, and they make me want to dance, because their blues songs are just over the top. December the 11th, which is next Monday, I will be doing a special show at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. It is the only time that my guests could do it, and I am so honored to have this gentleman on the show that I would do anything for him. I met him several years ago at a book signing, and he is an amazing traditionally published author. His name is James Swain. And if you haven't read him yet, no, you can't go get his books now. You've got to wait. But he has graciously agreed to spend an hour with me on Monday night at 9 o'clock here on Off the Chain. Also, on your calendars for next year, for January the 5th, at 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, mark it down to tune in to Investigation Discovery, because there is a show called Married with Secrets. I will be on that show. It is about Gerard Schaefer, who was Florida's first serial killer, and it has to do with my book Silent Scream, which is a true crime about the victims of this horrendous serial killer. So put that on your calendar. Now then, with all that being said, tonight's guest is an amazing, amazing man, and I am so honored and so privileged to have him on the show. I appreciate him coming on the show more than he knows. Number one, it is a very bad time of year for many, many people, because it is what I call the silly season. And we will be discussing that more in the importance of this show during this time. Author Timothy W. Carroll, he began writing prose and poetry during his early teenage years. Timothy's writings began as something very private and very personal. It was a form of journaling for him. And from a very early age, Tim secretly began to suffer from serious bouts of anxiety and depression, emotions that he simply did not understand. So he discovered early on that reading and writing were a healthy escape from these ups and downs and unexplained emotions. When Timothy reached his mid-teens, his secret battle with anxiety and depression only deepened. Like so many people, he began masking those negative feelings with getting high, drunk, and engaging in other negative behaviors, sort of a form of self-destruction. Thus, the nomadic journey that is Nomad, which is the name of his book, began. Today, Tim lives in sunny Florida with his wife, Tina. They have 6 wonderful adult children, and he enjoys being grandparents to several grandchildren. Tim continues to seek out his life's passion, to teach others how to avoid the unhealthy nomad life, and to teach those who have found themselves trapped in that solitary place how to find new hope and meaning for their lives through Christ. Welcome, Tim. Thank you for coming and spending an hour with me tonight. I truly, truly believe that things happen for a reason. And for me not to be able to get you on this show until this season, I believe that it was meant to happen.
Yes, thank you so much, Yvonne. It's an honor, and I appreciate your kind words. But it's truly an honor to be on the show with you tonight. And you're right; things do happen for a reason. It's a perfect time of the year to talk about these things.
And the fact that you're so willing and so open about it says a lot for your growth and your ability to understand that it anxiety and depression does not own you. You own it. And when you own it, then you can make it bend to your will or do with it what you want to happen because you don't have to fall into that. And before we talk about that, tell me about your journey. Tell me what happened that created that journey down that dead-end street and what caused you to start writing more than just an escape.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm not really good at saving things and taking care of things over the years. And one of the things I treasured and held on to because they meant a lot to me was my writing. And from time to time, I would share it with somebody, but mostly not. And in more recent years, I shared that with my wife and my very good friend, actually Dr. Pat Harless, who wrote the foreword to the book, and started sharing some of my writings with them. And they just fell in love with the honesty in it and the writing style and started to encourage me to maybe move and do something with it, you know, as far as in a book form or something. And I started working on that and working towards that. And then I just kind of came to the decision this past, I guess it was December, a year ago, to go ahead and made that decision to actually write the book and start putting it together because I had come to a place where I was really finding hope and healing. And I wanted to share that with other people because I know anxiety and depression is a real problem in our society. And a lot of people don't understand it. It's great for people to understand whether they suffer with it or if they have a loved one that does, because it's just as hard for the person living under the same roof with them if they don't understand it. So get some understanding and some hope. Yes.
Well, when you were growing up and you started these feelings of anxiety and depression, was it something that caused it in your growing up years? Was it family life, or was it just something that happened?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's a little bit of chemical. My brain doesn't, seem to transfer the melatonin like it ought to. Or serotonin, I mean. And so that causes some problems. I'm convinced of that from talking with my doctor over the years and so forth. But also, I got to say this, my dad and I are so close. He's become a wise old gentleman, and we're very close. But growing up, my dad was a very, very black and white, strict guy, and he was angry. He was just angry all the time. I was a dreamer, kind of a space cadet, always fantasizing, dreaming, and playing. And I think my dad thought I was from another planet. He simply did not understand me, and he really intimidated me a lot. And I think that's where a lot of my anxiety came from. He mistook where I was at as being lazy. And I just simply wasn't interested in anything that he was interested in at all. And I was scared to death of him. And I mean, that breaks his heart to know that now. He's a good man, but and that caused a lot of anxiety. And he just didn't know what to do with me. I was like this weird kid that he did not understand. Thank God my mom got me, but my dad just couldn't understand me. So I think that's where the majority of it would come from. And I was the laziest kid that ever lived. He ever walked the earth. I do feel sorry for my father in that regard. I grew up on a farm, and I was very allergic to work. I would, like a Tom Sawyer, I would go hide or find neighbor boys to do the work I was supposed to do.
Well, I don't think it was so much that you were lazy. It's that your intellect weighed more than your physical work habits. In other words, there are those of us that enjoy the physical work. We get off on it. It makes us happy. It releases all of the chemicals and the hormones and the, all the stuff that goes with it. And then there's those like you and I that we're dreamers. We're creative minds. Our intellect is on the right side of our brain. And people that aren't of the creative type don't understand that. I could make up stories out of my head sitting in history class. And it's not that we're lazy, because it takes to me a whole lot more energy to work my brain than it does to go out.
Yes. Yes. So, and it's just not perceived that way by others who aren't wired that way.
That's true. Because there was some. I've always worked. I started working at 5 years old. I've always worked at physical jobs and mental jobs. And I used to tell my mother, I would rather be physically tired any day of the week than mentally tired, because it took me so much longer to regroup after being mentally exhausted than it did from being physically tired.
I know exactly what you're saying. I completely agree with that. Yes.
So fast forward a little bit, when those two demons, and I use the term loosely, when they begin to own you, because as a child, we don't know what makes us angry. We don't know what causes depression. We don't know what, well, in my case, now I do, because I'm an empath and I pick up all the emotions of everybody else I was around, and I was around a lot of negative people. When we're young, we don't know that. So we start falling down into that rabbit hole. You took up writing. Did that help you to climb back out and put your life back into a perspective as a teenager, not knowing? Because then not only have you got that, Timothy, but you've got the puberty thing kicks in, the hormones start doing their thing, and here you are anxious and depressed and going from being a kid to being a teenager with all the other garbage that we have to carry as teenagers. How did the writing help you?
I think it came very naturally, that's for sure. I would just sit in my room with the doors locked and at my desk, and I wrote things that I would not dare, you could put a gun to me and I wouldn't have told anybody how I really felt. There's no way anybody would have known. So it was very private, very personal, but it helped me to get it out on paper, because it was brutally honest. It was sometimes very, very dark and raw, but boy, it was real. And that, I felt like that way I was getting it out, you know, letting it out.
When you did that thing, when you wrote all of that, nowadays, because of the environment we live in, if somebody were to find that, they'd become carting you away somewhere because they would be afraid you were going to blow up a school or something. But when you wrote that and you got it out, did you feel freer? Did you feel like you were that emotion of depression and anxiety no longer owned you at that moment?
I can't honestly, maybe at that moment, until I got much older into my adult years, and I'm talking more recent years, that I really realized the therapeutic value of it. And it's hard to really measure, if I'm brutally honest. I don't know. I got to think that it helped a lot more than I even knew at the time. You know, I think that's what it came down to. It was just such a natural thing for me to do, but at the same time, scary private. And the number overwhelming feeling I struggled with, and I realize now where I'm at, is it was shame. I never, ever felt good enough. I just felt shame and like always falling short. That's how I felt. And I had a lot of that had to do with my dad and our relationship and him being the way he was.
And of course, your dad, he didn't intentionally do that. He was just a parent trying to do the best he could. And
yes,
he believed in hard work and working from an Ladies and gentlemen, if you've never worked on a farm, you work from sunup to sundown 7 days a week. There's no break. And it's hard, brutal work because you work in the rain, you work in the snow, you work in the wind, you work in the heat, you work in the cold. It doesn't matter. When you work on a farm, that's what you do. And that's all he understood, was trying to make a living for his family. And he couldn't understand that he had a son who was a creator, who had a craft, a writing craft. And bless his heart, I know now he must feel awful, awful guilty because of all of those years that maybe he felt like he'd wasted.
We've had good talks about these things, very honest talks, and it's been so good for both of us. My sister has told me, though, those two talk about it, he gets choked up, and it really bothers him, which saddens me. But I also know he knows where I'm at now, and he's very happy, and he knows how much I think of him and respect him, and he taught me how to be a man with all his faults, you know, but in the
exactly.
bad thing, but boy, was he a great father. He was an awesome father. He just didn't get me. That's what it came down to. He didn't get me.
Well, honey, don't feel bad. My mama didn't get me either. So she and I had that same type of relationship.
Yes. There you go.
But it doesn't make them bad parents, because we learn things from them. Even though they didn't get us, I know you were grounded. I was grounded. But that being said, we made decisions in our life that were not, and I'm guilty of that as well, made some very stupid decisions in my life that did not serve me well. And in your case, you wanted to, and I may be saying this wrong, but I get the feeling that you wanted to get rid of the anxiety and the depression in the short term with getting high, the getting drunk, and engaging in all this other negative behavior.
Oh, exactly.
You didn't have to think about it. It was a mask over the problem. You just put a Band-Aid on it.
Yep. Exactly, you know, until you wake up the next morning. But at the time, I don't care. I just want it to go away right now, this moment. You know, I don't want to feel this way.
And then you wake up the next morning.
It's a vicious, dark cycle. Oh, yes.
Again, it's the recycling thing, because you wake up the next morning, you feel like hell, and you think, well, I'm going to fix this. So you go back and do the same actions over again, expecting a different result. It doesn't work.
No, it's called insanity, isn't it?
Yes, that's the definition of insanity. So let me ask you this. As depression and anxiety began to own you, did you find at times it was worse than at other times? Negative stuff aside.
Yes. I think the most torturous times are when one of two things, either nothing that you can see or aware of has even really caused you to feel this way. So you're like, what is wrong with me? I'm nuts. I just, you know, why do I feel so horrible and so like I'm just going to suffocate? And nothing's caused it, or something extreme happens that's really bad that, you know, and you're not handling it real well on the inside because, you know, like a death or something like that, mm-hmm. or a divorce. So those two situations were probably the most difficult times for me. When you're feeling really, really bad, and I know people can relate to this. This is why I like to talk about it, because people are like, yeah, I know what you're talking about. You at the same, simultaneously, you want to be completely alone, but you don't want to be alone.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's just this horrible, miserable darkness that just smothers you, like you're suffocating.
When you got at your lowest point, when you were so far down in that rabbit hole, and I know there were people on the top going, come on, snap out of it, Timothy, come on. And you're going, oh, no, I'm dragging you down with me, because that's what we do. You know, misery does love its company.
Yes, it does.
At, at what point in your life did you round that curve and say, wait, one of two things is going to happen here. I'm either going to wake up dead or I'm going to get my act together and I'm going to be the man that I know that's inside of me, irregardless of everything else that's going around me. When did you come to that conclusion? What was the trigger that pulled you up out of that and made you take a different path?
And I say this as a way of encouragement to people who, if it's kind of like addicts, you know, I'm not an addict, but it's similar how, you know, how they say once an addict, always an addict.
Yes.
And so I had several times throughout my life where something to that, close to that, not quite happened, where, like you're talking about, that moment, okay, I'm going to get it together now. I'm going to get, you know, I'm figuring this thing out. And then, oh my gosh, I make the worst decision of my life. And the next 5 years are hell, you know, because of it. I'd say the key turning point for me, though, was I had only been married like a year to my wife, Tina. This happened just about, I don't know, approximately 5 years ago now. I lose track of time. And I hopped in a car, packed our stuff, said, honey, I'm going to go to Florida. I'm going to start this new career. I'll get things going, and I'll bring you down with me. And long story short, I fell on my face. We went through $20,000 of our life savings. She's like, who in the world did I marry? I thought this guy was stable. I thought he had it together. Everything was just coming apart at the seams. And I had a day where I was renting a room in a house, and I literally ended up basically in the fetal position on my bed in that room with the room just spinning. And I just hit rock bottom. And it was either just die or let's get up, brush ourselves off, figure this thing out, and do the right thing and make the right choices. And I called my dad that weekend, and I said, Dad, this is the situation. And my dad's a facts man. Here's the facts. This is what's going on. I need to know what to do. And I never call my dad and ask him what I should do. He's a big believer. Once you're a man, you got to make these decisions. He said, Tim, Aaron, you just told me, if it's accurate, you need to pack your bags and you need to get your butt back to Ohio. And that's what I did. And we kind of just started over and did things. I'm still a dreamer, but I have to be responsible in learning mm-hmm. that balancing and that maturity. So you're not acting like Peter Pan and making more adult type decisions and long-term thinking, but yet still keeping that dreamer within me. And we were able to sell the house correctly in Ohio and get down here to Florida correctly and, you know, transition in that life down here in Florida. And I'd say in this whole time period, we'll be here 2 years in March in Florida. And this has been probably the greatest growth period of my entire life. And, you know, writing the book and putting this all together and putting it out there, say, okay, here you go, public. Here's Tim. This is raw. This is dark. I have a poem I write about with a gun in my mouth. You know, it's brutal. It's honest. And that was very, very healing for me when I actually put all my writing together, editing it, rewriting some stuff, writing introductions to chapters and dividing it up. That right there was just huge, and it helped me give real perspective on my life's journey, where I was and where I am today. And I saw, wow, I have grown so much. I have a long way to go, but boy, God has brought me on this journey, and he's been so patient with me, and he's taught me so much. And the biggest thing, and one of the biggest things, and it's just, is humility. Just humility mm-hmm. and love. Humility and love are the two greatest things that I seek out. And not thinking so highly of myself. So trying to help other people.
That becomes a problem when we think that we are bigger and better than anything or anyone else. The universe has a way of saying, okay, watch this. You think you've got it all together.
Well,
I'm going to show you. You're just, as my husband used to say, you're just a speck on an elephant's butt. You're insignificant
right.
in the big picture.
Yes.
You're not that important.
Right. Exactly.
And speaking of poems, will you read one of your poems for me, please? And our
certainly
listening
will.
Audience. I'm excited.
It's kind of difficult to know which one to pick. But I tell you what I'm going to do. I will read, because of what we talked about, I'll read the very first one that I managed to keep. And, you know, because there's others I know I wrote stuff, but this is the very first one that I know I kept chronologically. I was 16 years old. And it'll give you a real perception on everything we just talked about. It's entitled 16. My dad and I, we really are two very different people. He is so serious, such a perfectionist. Me, I am a dreamer. He sees me as lazy. We mix like oil and water, never getting along, never seeing eye to eye. I've stopped trying to please him. Why attempt the impossible? I can do nothing right. All is negative. I'm certain he no longer likes me. I know he loves me. He would die for me without hesitation, as I would for him. Nevertheless, he does not like this son. He seems burned out, tired of being my father. I'm certain that he prays for the day that I leave. This hurts so deeply. I pray that someday we will sit down together, sit as two grown men, that we would sit and talk like friends. But as long as I live here, there will only be strife. There is no getting along anywhere near.
Wow. That's extremely powerful. And the thing is, Tim, is that poem came full circle. That's almost like a prediction.
It's like prophecy, and I love it.
Yeah, it's perfect because y'all were able to sit down, and you were able to talk like friends, and you were able to understand each other, and you were able to find out that not only did your father love you, but he liked you.
Yeah.
He didn't understand you.
Yeah, that's right.
That's amazing. That I love that poem because I can guarantee you that there are, in this world, 99% of the teenagers feel exactly that same way.
I read that to a youth group several years ago, and you could hear a pin drop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just and the eyes watering up, and the guys, it just was like, oh, wow. You know, people can relate to that.
Because it's real life.
Yes.
Now, since we talked about this being the silly season, which starts in November and doesn't end until the new year, this is a very bad time for a lot of people, for whatever reason. Maybe they had bad experiences. Maybe they have lost a loved one. Maybe they're in between jobs. Maybe they're not speaking to siblings or to parents or they're in a new city and don't know anybody, but for whatever reason, they are having this anxiety and depression that just overcomes them and they don't know why. Would your book, Nomad, be a perfect book for them to read and then go out and change their attitude? We can't change other people, but we can change how we feel about them. So let's say Johnny is in Cleveland and Johnny doesn't know anybody, and Johnny's just broken up with his girlfriend. He was madly in love with her. She devastated him. So he's sitting in this apartment, and it's the silly season, and he's going bah humbug and screw Christmas, and he doesn't have any decorations up. He won't call anybody. He won't socialize. And he picks up your book.
Absolutely.
Would that give him pause to say, wait, the change has to come from within me, not other people?
Right. And that's a huge key part of it. That's right. It's going to do two things. It's going to, one, help people to get out of themselves and realize, oh, I'm not the only one that feels that way.
Yeah,
that right there is very helpful. And then secondly, very literal steps throughout the book to help them walk through it, to find that hope, to find that light, and to get back some control back in their life, to where they're not being controlled by their emotions, by their illness, you know, by their depression, their anxiety, and whatever it might be, whether it's caused specifically by something like you said, or it's just simply a general struggle that they fight.
Would it be safe to say, because like I told you before we went live, I've couldn't understand why I fought depression and I was angry all my life. Well, it's because I'm an empath. And now that I know I'm an empath and negative energy will sap me, I know what I have to do to deal with it. The key to recognize it for what it is, you can't just pop a pill and say, okay, I'm better. It doesn't work that way.
Amen.
Anxiety and depression is a real emotional and mental and can be a physical malady, but you don't cure it by popping a pill. You have to, as we talked about earlier, own it.
Yes, I completely agree. And we all know that sometimes you need some, most of us believe or agree that you need some medication to get you through a time period, but you're not going to get better if you think just popping a pill is going to make you feel better. Like you said, there's reasons why you're struggling. There's reasons you're depressed. There's reasons that you have anxiety that you need to face those giants and head on and kind of own some things. You know, what mistakes have I made in my life? What dumb things have I done? What people have I hurt? And I need to own those things, forgive myself, love myself, and own those things and gain some control. And for me, it was my faith in Christ, the fact that Christ loved me so much. And he's, you know, for me, the creator of the creator of the universe, the beginning and the end, doesn't just know about me. He knows me intimately and he loves me. And that's how he is with everybody. And to find that strength through prayer, meditation, and just seeking out, like you said, you know, we're seeking out love and humility and not putting my thinking so highly of myself. Those things right there are huge healing points into overcoming and not allowing those demons to control you. And I don't want to oversimplify it because it's a very complex topic.
It is very complex. Now, would it also be safe to say, Timothy, that once we own those things that we have done, and we've all done them, ladies and gentlemen, we don't need to be carrying that baggage around with us because it's in the past. We cannot change the past. So we need to just leave it back there where it belongs, and we need to let every day be a clean slate. We need to.
Yes. And in my book, I write a lot about that, right there, in different ways of saying it, in different metaphors and coming right out and saying it. Yeah, you got to leave that stuff there. Once you've identified it and you own it, now leave it there and keep walking, keep moving, because it's done. It's over. You can't change it.
And it's gonna keep you back there in the past, and you can't move forward. And when you talked about us forgiving ourselves and loving ourselves and liking ourselves, those are the three most difficult things that we as human beings can do.
Yes.
And once we recognize
that, who are the people we like to be around the most? People who truly are the opposite. What you just said. They love themselves. They're humble. They're strong. We love to be around people like that.
They lift us up.
They put off that energy. Yeah.
Yes. But then when we get back in our own little world, it's like, wait, the darkness is settling in because I'm really not that likable. I'm really not that nice person. And we start to doubt ourselves. And I have a saying. I used to say it many, many years ago. I faked it until I made it. I used to fake a lot of things until I made it. Until I convinced myself, Yvonne, you are worthy. You're okay the way you are. And if people can't accept that, that's not on you. It's on them.
Yes. Yeah, that's powerful. I couldn't agree more.
You say something about Nomad that if I don't say it now, we'll forget about it, and then the night will get away from us. You say, escape the darkness, release your baggage, and embrace a new life of spiritual fusion. Explain that to our listening audience, because that is a very powerful sentence.
Escaping the darkness. And that is your personal darkness, whatever those demons are, whatever that darkness is, where you're stuck, where you're it's toxic. It's a toxic place, very toxic. You know, and releasing your baggage, you and I have already discussed that. It's about identifying your ugliness, your bad stuff you've done or thought, or, you know, things that you've maybe feeling guilty about, beating yourself up, leaving that behind. And leaving that behind can mean also getting toxic people out of your life who won't let you forget about what you've done. Those are toxic people that you can't, you have to figure out how you're going to handle that as well. And embrace a new life of spiritual fusion. To me, that's the most important part. The spiritual fusion is key. It's what brought my healing. It's where, wow, it's just a life changing. You know, spiritual fusion, basically what I mean by that is when we think of the word fusion, it's when you take two different, and I'm not a scientist, but you take two different substances, and when they're combined, they become one substance. And a very, very, very simplistic way to think of fusion is take two glasses and put them on the counter. You're going to put – one's just a plain glass, and the other one has ice in it. And you're going to pour some sugar in the one with ice and then cold water, and you stir it up. Well, it's going to be semi-sweet. A lot of that sugar goes to the bottom. But if you take the other glass, and let's say instead of it's a glass, it's a mug, it's a cup, and you put hot steaming water in there that's been boiling, and then you put your tea bag in there, and you put some sugar, and you stir that up, what happens? That sugar melts and dissolves. It actually becomes a new substance. And if that water was hot and you stirred it up, there's not going to be sugar in the bottom of that thing. It's fused. It's become one, a new element. Well, God, but what I believe is that God, the creator of the universe, the beginning, the end, no one created him, no one came before him or after him. He knows each person intimately. He loves and cares for each person intimately. And his wisdom is beyond imagine. And the fact that he loves me so much, it blows me away. But he desires to have a relationship of what I call spiritual fusion. And that simply means that God does not want to be a part of my life. Instead, he demands to be that which my life is all about. Every aspect. He's not a segment of my life where it's some dead religion because I go to church every Sunday or I lead a Bible study or this or that. He's in every aspect, every nook and cranny of my life is about God. I'm aware of his presence, and I talk to him throughout the day in my mind, and I give him thanks, and I you know, ask him for help, and I'm just so aware of him. It's a relationship. Now, it's a very – he's not some angry, cold God up on a throne somewhere, but it's this relationship of the creator of the universe who guides me and directs me. When I have those old demons – I call it the old man in my book, the old man. The old man is there. I believe that we're eternal creatures. You know, this is just the very, very beginning of the life ahead of us when we go home. But that old man is going to be with me until I leave this earthly body. And he is screaming to get out all the time. That's my old self, my old sinful nature, who wants to do those things that are counterproductive, that really tear down, but they might be gratifying for a short period of time. And he screams and he hollers and he's basically everything opposite of what God is. But God wants to be that. And I can cry out to God when that voice gets too loud. But that's what I mean by that sentence in front of that book. And I hope I wasn't too windy there.
No, it's perfect, because I'm sitting here listening to you. And when we think we're at the bottom of that pit and we think that we're all alone and we think that nobody will ever get us, and when we think that there is nothing left, who's there? When the whole world walks out, who's there?
Amen. That's right.
And he knows us, like you say, so intimately that he has a big picture of our life. Now, he does give us free will. He says, okay, go out and do it, good, bad, or indifferent. You have free will to do it. But understand, for everything that you do, there is an equal and or opposite reaction, which causes an equal and or opposite consequence. So nothing is without reactions and consequences. But, okay, you want to do this thing, you go do it. You want to fall down into that rabbit hole, and you want to wallow around in self-pity, and you want to do all the stupid things to your body and mind and soul that you're doing. Go ahead and do it. Just remember this. I am long-suffering. I will always be here. I never leave you. And, you know, I've heard people say, well, God left me, or else God wouldn't have allowed this to happen, or God wouldn't have allowed that to happen. That's not a true statement. God never leaves. God knows what's going to happen. It's up to us to always have him within us so that no matter what happens, we have that assurance that he will protect us.
Amen. We forget that he knows the beginning and the end. That, you know, time is irrelevant to God, and it's very relevant to our earthly minds and bodies. But it's irrelevant to God. You know, time doesn't mean anything if you're an eternal being. And we forget that in that, He knows the whole picture. He knows what's going on. He's in control. God doesn't change. And he's very much aware of what's going on. And he knows the outcome and how everything works out and what its purpose is. And you hit a key point that we tend to forget. He gives us free will. That's how much he loves us. He didn't make us to be robots. He allows us to make those choices and stumble and fall. You know, my girls, a great example, I have my middle daughter who I'm so proud of. I'm proud of all my kids, but my middle daughter recently got a really great job, and she called me up the other day. She said, Dad, I am so glad that you were so hard on me growing up, that you were so tough. She goes, my friends don't even know how to take care of themselves. They still live with their parents. There's no way they could pay bills. You know, and she's lived on her own for a while. Now she gets it. Wow, I can take care of myself. And it pays off, you know. And, you know, our Father in heaven, he knows what's best, and he's in control. It just doesn't seem like it sometimes.
When 2 years ago we lost my granddaughter, she was 13. She had an asthma attack and it killed her. Well, I've had people say, well, aren't you mad at God? No, I'm not. Why do I want to be mad at God? Because God is the one that got me through the grief and got helped me get my children through the grief. But God had a picture. God knows down the road. Even though she was only 13, she gave life to six other people. Now, I don't know what's down the road for those six other people. One of them was a 12-year-old girl. She got her heart, and the girl was on the verge of dying. She was like within weeks of dying. Well, she got Ramonda's heart. And at first, they thought that Ramonda's heart would be too damaged because she went into cardiac arrest when she had the asthma attack. But again, God took care of it. The heart was in perfect shape. So what is down the road for this 12-year-old girl? We don't know. But God does.
Right.
He has a plan. And we have to understand and believe that he knows what's going on, and he knows what's best. And when things happen, it's not God hates us or God let her die. It's a natural order of things that are happening, and there's a plan down the road.
Yes. I totally agree with that. Totally agree.
So if we say we love God but we don't have faith, then I think we're liars.
Yes. I mean, that's the book of James, you know, basically talks about the combination of how we live and faith. And, it's the faith, trusting in God. And, you know, that's something we have to ask for, too. It's faith. It's literally something we have to ask for. And I'm one of those people who tend to, I don't like to, for the, myself, I don't mind other people using the word, of course. I don't even like to use the word Christian anymore, because in our society, in our modern day society, it means a little something different to everybody. So what I consider myself is a passionate follower of Christ. And because that's really what it comes down to. And the, when we talk about healing and the anxiety and the depression and like what you went through, God tells us when we call out to him in faith and we believe in him and I've accepted Christ as my Lord and Savior, that he sends his helper, the Holy Spirit. And that's where my real help comes from. That's my rock. That's my guide. That's that little voice that gives me guidance and direction, that encourages me. You know, and that's why as a follower of Christ, I believe in the Trinity, you know, the three in one. So
the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost.
Yes, ma'am.
And the thing, Tim, that we tend to forget is when life is rocking along and we have everything we want, need, or desire, and there's no trouble in our life, there's no bumps in the road, and there's, you know, clear sailing. Boy, we're faithful, we love God, he's so good to us, and then wham, we slam up against a wall, and we go, what God?
Yeah.
What are you talking about, God? Amen. God deserted me.
Yes. And that's so sad. That's so tragic.
Yeah, because your faith.
It's so tragic.
In one fell swoop, you said, okay, I believed in God because he was so good to me on one hand. Then on the other hand, when you need him the most,
yeah.
You turn away from him.
I think that's part of the reason God allowed me to hit for me and everybody, it's different. But for my rock bottom, to hit my rock bottom when I did was for that reason right there, to come to the realization that God is God. I'm either going to believe in him and I'm going to follow him and seek him out and try to figure out and learn who he is and what he is the rest of my life, or it's a bunch of nonsense. And I had to come to that conclusion that no, I okay, you know, and regardless of my surroundings, just like what you said, regardless of what's going on in my life, it has absolutely nothing to do with who God is. At all. And to come to that place takes time, but it's something, the key is starting to think about it and seeking it out. And then if we seek these things out, they come to us, you know, in time.
And live in it. So, and live in it.
Yes, so much. So, you're right.
My husband had colon cancer surgery in August, and in a week after we got home, we had to flee the hurricane. I had to take him to Georgia. Now, we left Florida with staples still in his side and the surgery not even a week old, and left going to Georgia because we didn't want to lose electricity because all of his medical equipment is run by electricity. So we got into traffic on 95. And we was in traffic all the way to Georgia, and it finally cleared up. And he said, Yvonne, I was really, really worried about all of this when we left. I said, honey, I wasn't, because I talked to God, and I knew that he had it. He is in control. If we have a wreck and die, he's still in control. God is in control of this, not us. And he said, when you told me that, I just relaxed with it. I didn't worry anymore.
That's where the strength comes. Oh, it's very powerful. It's life changing. It's life changing. It's life changing for sure. And people need to really grasp a hold of what you just said in that concept, because that is very life changing. It's very powerful.
I never expected to hear those words out of his mouth. But when he said, as soon as you told me that, I just felt a peace and a calm come over me, and I didn't worry about it anymore.
Amen.
And you're not going to believe this, Tim, but our hour is almost up.
Oh, my goodness.
I told you we'd go by 5 minutes. What I want you to do, my friend, is tell folks where you can be found and where the book can be found, because this book is a powerful book, and I highly recommend it to all of our listening audience. and to give it as a gift for someone who's struggling.
Yes. Yeah. It'd be a wonderful gift. Okay, the easiest way to find me, there's a lot. Now, this book is available at any bookstore worldwide. I mean, Barnes & Nobles and so forth. If it's not on their shelf, tell them to order it for you, and they will. They'll get it in there if it's not, because it's available everywhere. The easiest way, quite frankly, in my opinion, to get this book, though, is just go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com and look, do the search for Nomad, N-O-M-A-D. And put it, there are a lot of books with that title, evidently, different genres and so forth. But put in my name, Timothy W. Carroll, that's C-A-R-R-O-L-L, and with Nomad, and you'll find it, no problem. You can do a Google search, and it'll pull right up. I have a Facebook page. I have my personal page. You're more than welcome to get a hold of me there, Tim Carroll. And then I have my author page on Facebook, Timothy W. Carroll. And those are the really – you can message me. I'm very, very good about getting back to people, whether we're messaging or on the phone. You can go to my email, timothywcarroll@gmail.com. And I'm very responsive to people who reach out. The whole idea for this book was for me to try to help people through the darkness and finding that light, because – it's just such a toxic, horrible place to live in. I lived in it most of my life. I'm about 50 years old, and the majority of my life was lived in that dark, stuck place I didn't know how to get out of. So it's my life's passion to try to help other folks find their way out of there. You know, I don't have all the answers, but I have learned a lot the hard way, and I believe I was allowed to go through all that hard stuff so that I can help other folks through this book and through talking with folks.
Excellent. Now, will you come back?
Oh, I would love to. I really enjoyed her talking. It went by too fast.
It did. Now, when the show goes off live, don't hang up, because I have some things for you. But I did want to thank you for being on the show tonight. And ladies and gentlemen, you know that there are several things that I say at the end of the show. But first, join us tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time when author L.K. Shaw will be with us. Now, the difference between who you are today and who you want to be tomorrow is what you do today. And that's what we've been talking about tonight. If you want to change who you are today, then change what you do. If you want to achieve greatness, please stop asking permission, because nobody's going to give it to you. They want to keep you down in that pit with them, because misery does love company. Your smile is your logo. Your personality is your business card. And how you leave others feeling after having had an experience with you, ladies and gentlemen, that does become your trademark. And if you don't believe me, try it. People will forget your name. People will forget what you look like. But they will never, ever, ever, ever forget how you made them feel. And that is what we hope that we accomplish on this show, is we make our guests feel so important, because they are. They are the most important thing about this show. And you listeners, you are the most important thing about this show. If we didn't have both of y'all, I could sit here all night and talk. Nobody would care. So leave others having had a positive experience with you. Not only will it make them feel better, but it will make you feel so much better. You have no idea. If you make one person smile a day, your inner self will be bursting forth like a ray of sunshine. You won't have time to be depressed. You won't have time to be anxious. And remember this, ladies and gentlemen, there's no reason to be anxious, because for every problem, there is a solution. If we just look close enough, and if we take the time to step back and think logically without emotion, there is a solution for every problem. Don't forget, Monday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, author James Swain will be with us. January the 5th at 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, I will be on Investigation Discovery, Married with Secrets. Next week, we're going to have a show every night. All 6 nights, we have a show. So be prepared. Lord willing, and the creeks don't rise, and Blog Talk Radio doesn't screw us up again. Tomorrow night, again, L.K. Shaw will be with us. She is an author, so join us. And ladies and gentlemen, take tonight's show and share it. This is a very important show because it is the silly season, and there are a lot of people out there that are carrying very heavy burdens. So offer to share that burden so it'll be lighter, and share this show with them. And, yes, you can go and get the books in about 30 seconds. Tim, I want to say thank you again so much, my friend, for joining me. And, ladies and gentlemen, until tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, when Off the Chain with me, your host, Yvonne Mason, once again opens up the switchboard, we want to say have a wonderful, wonderful evening and good night. Okay, the show has now gone off the air. We are in archives, so whatever we say is going to show up in archives. But I wanted to tell you, as soon as we hang up, the show will move up into archives. Once it does that, I will put the link on my Facebook page and I will tag you in it. I want you to take the show and spread it everywhere. Oh, it gets better.
You better believe it. Yes.
There are five podcasts that I put this show on. I put it on podcast.com, Podcast Garden, Spreaker, SoundCloud, and Mixcloud. I will do that tomorrow. When I put those put the show up on those podcasts, I will put the link up on my page and tag you in it. Also, they automatically go up on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, FM.com, and YouTube.
Okay, great.
So when I put the shows up, just like when I built this show, you are in the tag, author Timothy Carroll.
Okay.
So and
great.
That's what I will do with all the podcasts. And also when you share the show on your Facebook page, if you'll do hashtags like hashtag radio, like you see me do, if you do those hashtags and you're linked to Twitter, it automatically feeds over to Twitter.
Oh, okay, great. Good deal. Okay.
So and so you're gonna get all kinds of exposure, and you will get a following on this show, I guarantee you.
Well, Yvonne, you just do such a wonderful job. That's your gift. You're so good at what you do. And
thank you.
I really appreciate you having me on. I mean, wow, what a blessing. And it's just an honor because you are so good at what you do. I mean that sincerely.
I want to put people at ease because I have a lot of first-time guests, and they say, I'm so nervous, I'm going to be on the radio. But it's really just a conversation between two people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And we just have 100,000 people listening in, but that's okay.
That's right. You know, my biggest nervousness was not that, but I don't do as well on the phone as in person because I'm a big one on reading your facial expressions. And I have a hard time sometimes on the phone. I have a bad habit of interrupting or over talking over somebody, and I don't mean to. So that was the thing I was probably the most nervous about tonight is having a smooth conversation.
Well, I want people to, no matter how many times my guests come on the show, I want them to always feel comfortable on the show. That's why I always ask, call in 10 minutes ahead of time so we can chat before we go live. Because what happens is it by the time the show goes live, that guest forgets they're on the radio.
Yes, you're exactly right. It's just like you said, it's just me and you having a conversation. You're right.
You're prepped, but you're not a robot because you have no idea what we're going to talk about because we don't know where the conversation. We're just having a conversation.
Yeah, yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. So.
I forgot to ask you: Are you gonna put out another book?
Well, it's all in my head. Yeah, I think so. Lord willing, I'd like to. But as you know, as an author yourself, I'm still paying because it's my first book. I had a lot to learn to do it right. So I paid some bucks and I'm still getting some of that paid off. I'm a starving artist. Let's put it that way. So, yeah, I'd love to once that's taken care of.
My friend owns a publishing company. She publishes my books. So when you get ready to publish again, don't go to a vanity press. Come to me because it's about 100 times cheaper.
Okay, great. Great.
And
I will definitely get with you because I know you've got experience. So I, you know, that's what you're looking for, is meeting people who know what they're talking about. So
like-minded people.
Thank you. So well said.
You,
perfect.
You are welcome, my dear. So I will set you up to come back May, June. Let's see where you are and just have another conversation, because I don't think we've talked about everything that needs to be said. We need to educate people in the depression arena.
So real.
Because we're losing,
sad. Yes.
Yeah. We're losing way too many people, especially young people, to suicide. So
that is right.
Bullying, depression and bullying.
Yeah.
We got to keep educating people.
Yep,
so, my
dear,
I'm going to get off from here so I can get this thing up. Thank you once again for spending an hour with me. It was,
I had a blast. Anything I can do with the book, I love. So,
well, as you should. But
it
I was having a kind of a rough day myself this week. It's my husband's not in the best of health, and it's the silly season, so it's been kind of a rough week.
And,
so thank you for letting me bend your ear.
You got it. Well, and thank you for being such a wonderful hostess. That was wonderful. I feel better than I did, too, before I talked to you. So, there you go.
Like-minded people, positive attitudes.
Yeah.
It works wonders.
You better believe it. Exactly.
Better
the opposite of toxic.
Exactly.
Great.
Cut all the negative out, and we just talk about upbeat things. So
that's
give your wife a hug and tell her thank you for keeping you around, because you are indeed a blessing, and I appreciate you very, very much.
Thank you, Yvonne. I can't wait till we see each other again, too. So
I'm telling you. And so we will set about getting you back on in May and see where we are and do some more educating.
I'd love it. That sounds wonderful.
All right. Let me get off from here and get this up so I can get it sent to you and you can start spreading the word, my friend.
You bet. Thanks so much. You have a great evening, Yvonne. I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Bye-bye.